Hey guys, my name is Fane Mensah, head of the scientific community, and welcome to season 2 of Cap Talk, the podcast that talks to the who's who in computer-aided biology. This season, David and I will cover various themes at the intersection of biology and technology, from hiring and team building to data strategies, from bioprocessing to Internet of Things. We're really excited to welcome a new guest and gain some new insights. You can hail the cab at revolutionaries@computeratedbiology.com to tell us where to take you next. And to stay up to date, you can find all our great content on computeratedbiology.com. Enjoy the next episode and don't forget to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Cab Talk, the computer-aided biology podcast. This month, we're talking all about vaccines. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Fane Mensah.
Hi, everyone.
And our guest this month is Assistant Professor Bruno Correa at the Laboratory of Protein Design and Immunoengineering at the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne in Switzerland.
Wow, David, I didn't know your French was that good.
Ah, je parle français. There they use computational tools to design proteins, for example, for use in vaccines. And that's obviously what we're going to talk about today. You might not have noticed it, but vaccines are in the news a lot recently for some reason. It's almost as if there's a global pandemic and we all desperately need vaccines. And in the news, as we're recording this right now, there's the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine has been halted around Europe for fears that it's causing blood clotting. However, the main medical agencies of most countries are saying that it is not statistically significant. Fane, how do you feel about that?
Good point. I was reading about it as well. And obviously, when I'm Dutch and in the news yesterday, it arrived and my mom called me straight away because she was like, I'm waiting for the AstraZeneca vaccine and what's going on. And it's been a bit of a chaos for several reasons. I think there are only a few people that have had blood clots. Apparently, we were quite young people as well. But I think the most important thing is weighing out the benefits from a vaccination compared to the cases of the blood clots. And I think the vaccines of everyone getting a vaccine is so important now. But I think in vaccinations, this is something to expect. But yeah, let's see how everyone deals with it.
Well, I think this is the thing. Everybody's learning about vaccines in the general population, a lot of them for the first time. So the big question is, like, what are vaccines and how do they work? And that's why we've got an expert. Bruno, enlighten us.
Okay, I think, well, so thanks a lot for having me. You know, it's great to be here and having the opportunity to chat. Well, I think it's interesting that you say that we're now just learning about vaccines, but it's interesting also that, you know, the reason why we're just now learning about them, it's because mostly until now, they've been a given for most of the problems that we have had, right? You know, most of us, when we were born, we already had all the vaccines we needed to ensure a long life and healthy life, or at least to a lot of the pathogens which have been affecting largely the population. Of course, this is not true for every pathogen. There's a number of you know, exceptional cases, but the reality is this, right? You know, we always, I think in our mind, it was a given that there was always a vaccine to back us up, you know, to hold our back. Well, I guess this time we didn't have one, and I think we see how things worked out. And so, you know, but going back to your question, so we all should know what vaccines are, right? You know, because ultimately, you know, if one would summarize how what a vaccine does, you know, you could actually say that many of the vaccines we use, they actually change the course of humanity, right? Because they change the way we live our lives, right? We live our lives so healthy and so protected from diseases that would basically condemn us to die, you know, in early age or you know, from conditions which are so strange, right? And we just don't get affected by it. There's of course another concept related to the vaccines, which is herd immunity, which we can talk about later. But more as thinking about vaccines on what they are made of, right? You know, so ultimately, they're really biological formulations which can vary in a number of different forms. And lately we've been exposed to new forms of vaccination, but oftentimes what we would use to vaccine or to vaccinate people is really live attenuated viruses or inactivated viral materials. And essentially with, and if you think about it, is actually, that's not our typical medicine. You know, our typical medicine is generally something that is a chemical formula that is very well defined, very well controlled. Vaccines are also very well defined and very well controlled. However, their constitution is more complex than what we're used to in our medicines. Now, of course, we've been exposed to two different types of vaccine of vaccination, right? One of them being an mRNA vaccine, which is essentially delivering nucleic acids to make a protein. So that's a much better, well, you know, you can think about it as almost like, you know, the Cadillacs of vaccines, right? The vaccine that everybody wanted to have because it's something very well defined, is not a very complex biological mixture, you know, and that it works really well. And then we, of course, have also the viral vectors, like the one that you were just talking about in terms of the vector that is used to deliver the AstraZeneca vaccine. It's just a viral vector which also instructs the cells of the body to make one of the key antigens of the virus.
I think that's the key difference, isn't it, with the new mRNA vaccine. It is defined. It's the instructions for making the viral protein, which we can really control rather than trying to purify that from, you know, growing the virus.
Exactly. Rather than having sort of like a very, you know, you can almost say heterogeneous formulation of viral materials, which if you think about it, you know, I think everybody always wanted to have more defined vaccines. However, you know, if we think about how the immune system works, right, we know that you know, you can split the immune system in basically two major arms. There's more ways to split it, right? But you have the B cells and the T cells, right? And when you have all these viral components, you basically get a response coordinated from both of the arms, and that's typically the best responses you can have. Although what we think that is the most protective component that correlates with vaccine efficacy is the antibody responses. And so antibody responses are essential, but of course you cannot have like a great antibody response if you don't have a good T cell response. So all in all, when you have this very messy, let's put it this way, in, you know, non-scientific terms, viral formulations, you activate the signals very well, and then you use an adjuvant as well to further stimulate the immune system. And so those are great, right? You know, now of course the surprise came that when you actually have this very well established formulations with mRNA and with lipids to deliver this mRNA and the adjuvants, your immune system gives you a great response, right? And that's been really great news for everybody.
This is very interesting because we now come into my, I have to say, expertise, because my PhD was on B cells and antibodies. And something that I always find very interesting about B cells is the signals that they're getting to eventually become antibody producing cells or making these neutralizing antibodies, which we also see it in the corona vaccines. But my question to you, Bruno, is the protein is such an important thing. The antigen just being recognized by a B cell, by the B cell receptor, is so key. Why is it that this is such a big thing and such a struggle for vaccines?
Well, that's a fantastic point, which could basically lead us to, you know, 3 hours of conversation. But let's try to summarize it in 3 minutes, okay? I guess the idea here is that ultimately what you're doing with vaccines is you're teaching, you're training, you're instructing your immune system to recognize molecules which it will be exposed later on when it encounters the virus. So all in all, what we're talking about is about the encounter of molecular entities, right? You know, on one side, you have the B cell receptor, on the other side, you have the antigen. And so in some of the vaccines, what it's really challenging is because some of these antigens, you cannot preserve their form, their shape. And so if you do formulations out of them and you change their shape, and then you present that changed shape to the immune system, whenever the immune system is challenged with a real virus, it doesn't recognize that shape, right? So, you know, so you can think about this in very simple terms of like just shape recognition aspects. And it is, you know, and part of it is a lot of that. So why is it important, right? You know, and why this has been a big success, for instance, with with the Moderna vaccines and other vaccines. This is not just something with the Moderna, but there's been a precedent also in literature, is that we were able to instruct the organism to make the exact protein or the exact relevant protein, which needs to be presented to the immune system to make these antibodies that then when the virus come, they're ready to go in order to protect you from infection. And so I think, for the more general audience, I would think about this as a game of shapes, right? You know, it's all about presenting the right shape to the immune system. And if you cannot think too much in the atomic level, think more in the macroscopic level, right? In big objects, because you could potentially understand it better that way.
I think we've been hearing an awful lot about protection from these vaccines provide, and the word efficacy gets thrown around. Is that the same as protection, or what's the relationship?
So, ultimately in the press, it's likely going to be used interchangeably, and the meanings are largely overlapping. But okay, but efficacy has this sense of how efficacious a particular vaccine is over a population, right? So it's not just this idea that, you know, to be efficacious, it means that you were efficacious at a particular rate. So it means that it was tested in a cohort of people. In principle, now that we're talking in humans, generally we would never talk in humans, okay? We would only talk in animal models. But these days we only talk in humans, right? But, you know, we have clinical trials of different tiers. Eventually your last clinical trial is when you recruit thousands of people to this clinical trial. Some of them are given the placebo, some of them are given the vaccination. And then the only thing you do is you start counting how many people on the vaccine group actually got the virus or not, right? You know, and in principle, in the placebo group, many of them will get the virus, but here, you know, how many did actually get it? And then this basically tells you efficacy, right? You know, across the population, across a large group of people, how efficacious it was. Protection can also mean that, but generally is more sort of like this term of, you know, if you were taking the vaccine and you then were exposed to the virus, did you develop any kind of disease or not? And if you didn't, then it means that you're protected. Mm. If you did, then that means that you are not protected. Now, you know, being protected or being contagious, it's a little different, right? You know, because you can be contagious and not develop disease. But you can still be protected, right? So there's a lot of like flavors here into things, but essentially protection and efficacious go hand in hand with one another, because you can only be efficacious if you protect. But efficacy has this meaning that comes across a population.
Okay. And Bruno, obviously we're three scientists here, and we probably the conversation that we're having, we understand it quite a bit. But as you already mentioned, like it's a global thing now. And as you mentioned in the beginning, we always thought like vaccines is a given. We get it when we were young. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people don't even realize that types of vaccines that you get when you were born are the similar type of vaccines that we're now using. So I think a very important point here is around communication around the general population and reaching out to those people. And we had a talk before, and you mentioned like not everyone wants to listen to a scientist to explain exactly how things are going. But what approach are you taking when you explain how vaccines work not from a scientific perspective, but absolutely, really to your nan or to your wife?
My neighbors.
Yeah, to your neighbors.
Yeah, trust me. I have had a few experiences. Look, you know, it's disarming sometimes. It's complex. I have not been trained for such an exercise, because it's, you know, it's a bit of this one thing, right? You know, it's something that I have never questioned, and I don't question it, because, you know, because when I develop an antigen in my lab and when I go and I test it in an animal, you know, I know when it works, and when it works, you know, the results are there. I read the data and I know it works. Mm-hmm. But many of the people have never seen that in their lives. right? The only thing that they have is this concept of something that is injected in their arm, and then they're never sick, right? And they never seen anybody sick. And so there's this lack of proximity with what is the impact of not being vaccinated. And so when I think then there's also this idea that has grown in people that pharmaceutical companies are developing these things to get rich. So, you know, the first thing that I tell to people is, you know, yes, sure, you know, perhaps you can make money out of vaccines, but I can guarantee you it's not where you make your money. It's not where a big pharmaceutical company makes their money. Okay, this is just, this is a low value product, by the way. It's sold by not a lot of money. You mostly take it once in your lifetime, and that is that, you know. So that's one approach that I start taking, just basically saying, you know, look, you know, this is not like a high value product. This just basically to take this barrier that there's like a financial interest in getting people vaccinated. Okay. And then I think there's also another aspect that, you know, I try to bring, you know, and I try to talk to people that oftentimes is not also about, protecting themselves, but rather protecting the others. And, you know, again, you know, to somebody that is not willing to hear a few arguments about why vaccines are important in our society, then we generally don't get to like a good a good agreement. But oftentimes, you know, by talking about this idea that, you know, it's not just about us, you know, particularly I think in the coronavirus for certain populations, it's very obvious, you know, that most likely it's not about you, you know, if you're young, and, you know, I think things are also changing a little bit with the new variants and whatnot, but mostly it's not about you, it's about you protecting the others.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think oftentimes people forget about that, you know, either we're all protected or nobody's protected. And,
yeah. David, I just want us to be curious as well. How have you been going around talking about vaccines or communicating with people around you?
I've mostly been talking to family as it is. Mm. And I am kind of lucky enough that my family aren't super crazy when it comes to this stuff. I've heard some horror stories from friends, but my family are fairly scientifically minded, which is good. I did a podcast actually recently as a guest, which is weird for me, and talking a little bit about kind of more genetic engineering and stuff, and trying to explain mRNA to people. I found very, very tricky, because it's not quite DNA, it's not quite the instructions for something. It's like, it's like someone has taken or copied a page from the instruction book, which is kept in a special room called the nucleus. And that instruction page is being taken somewhere else to the production line, which is outside. And that's called, you know, the ribosome. And it's tricky.
And I think a lot of people, you know, sort of like come up with these ideas, well, but will this change your genome? And in your genome? And I was like, well, you know, often the first time I heard that question is like, well, it has never occurred to me that such a thing would even ever be possible to be asked. But it's fair, right? You know, I think it's important, and particularly, you know, in a society where both reliable information as well as much less reliable information spread at the same speed of the virus. Mm-hmm. You know, we have issues, right? We have issues to make the right message come across. Mm. And I was not expecting this kind of, you know, sort of like this kind of reaction against
resistance. Yeah.
Yeah. Against the vaccine. You know, this to me, it's very surprising. In general, for me, resistance to vaccines is surprising. Okay. But, you know, but I've been reading about it, sort of like, you know, and for instance, you know, there's this very, famous person in Italy, you know, which was this doctor, which, you know, a few years back, he is like a, you know, I forget his name now, but he's sort of like a science communicator. And he actually has talked about his experience on how to try to change the minds of populations related to vaccines, but it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy
thing. No, absolutely.
At least from the genetic point of view, you can educate people about mRNA. You know, I worked with mRNA for years. It degrades like that, you know, it's just gone. The idea that it could integrate into your genome, it's like, it wouldn't have time. But, you know, that's one thing that you can educate on. But then there's other conceptions where people have very out there ideas. I did hear a story from a friend that they believed the virus would control them somehow, or that they would be susceptible to mind control. I can't fathom the mechanism for that. If there was a mechanism for it, why wouldn't they give you that one when you're a baby and can't do anything about it? You know, that would make sense. Actually, I shouldn't say that makes sense. None of it makes sense.
Yeah, I think oftentimes, you know, this stories do get blown up in ways that I think we never even considered, right? You know, how and that, you know, but I think that's exactly the key, right? You know, that's exactly the key. You cannot just sort of like, you know, accept that you would never consider it just because, you know, you're a scientist or because this or that. You know, it is your job to go and talk to people, right? And tell them, well, you know, what are your concerns, right? You know, please tell me what are your feelings about it, right? I think, you know, this posture also that I've basically, you know, that I voiced to you, sort of like saying, well, look, you know, I've never even considered that. But okay, but it's time to forget all that, right? You know, and it's time to go to the streets and it's time to, you know, to talk to people and spread the word that sort of like, look, here's the deal. These things have allowed us to live the life we live. I know that most of us don't really remember what our life was without them. But if there's something that works, this is it. You know, this works. It's fantastic. It has changed our lives in many different ways. But we should listen to people, right? I think this is the idea. The idea cannot be sort of like the pushback, you know, look, you know, how can you possibly think this kind of thing? Well, look, okay, you are thinking it. Now let's deconstruct it a little bit and let's see what. Now, you will face situations where you will have basically very little maneuver space, you know, because it's a bit like, you know, when you discuss religion, okay, you know, religion or taste, for all I care, right? You know, you have your taste, I have my taste, but of course that tastes and religions are things that we acquire differently and then we just don't discuss. It is what it is and that's it. Here we're talking about scientific facts, right? And of course that when we get politicians, when we get economists, when we get everybody talking about science, then things get a little messed up, right? Because, you know, oftentimes people don't really have the right messages. And I think it's important to just spend the time. And each one of us, you know, if we spread the word for other five people, maybe those other five people will further spread the word. That's all that there is to do. There's nothing else, I think.
Absolutely. And I think we're doing that for the podcast as well. And I think what you mentioned is important. It's facts. It's all about spreading facts and informing people about it. But yeah, this podcast wouldn't be a computer aided biology podcast if you didn't talk about 21st century tools, technologies, and something I wanted to go into is Bruno is your work in the field of vaccines. So you, as I said, I think you've been designing artificial proteins using computational biology tools. In the beginning, we talked a bit about the antigen and how important it is. Can you tell us a little bit more about the research that's going on in your lab?
Absolutely. I think sort of like that's in principle the easy part to talk about. So let's see. So I think, you know, we were talking here a bit in lay terms or in general terms, this idea of recognition, right? Of shape recognition, that basically you can think about the starting of this immune reaction on how you teach your immune system to recognize a virus. First, you need to tell the immune system which shapes to recognize. And so once you know, and so let's say that, you know, your immune system is a lock, right? And you need to present a key that has a particular shape so that this lock and this key come together and suddenly this starts a reaction that that basically creates these antibodies and this immune defenses that, that we all want right now. Ultimately, you know, what we do with computers is to design the key, right? So we understand which kind of shapes the virus shows. We understand also, you know, through a lot of the work that the immunology community does and the structural biology community does, we can pinpoint which kind of shapes the immune system react to. And if those antibodies that are created against those shapes are in fact protective against this infection. And then, you know, we try to, as the best as we can, of course, using computational design tools to design proteins, which for those of you that are not so familiar with what proteins are, they're just polymers, repetitions of amino acids that acquire these three-dimensional shapes. And so by using computation, what we try to do is to understand which sequences can acquire those three-dimensional shapes so that then we can use them as the key or the instructions to guide the immune system for these useful immunological reactions. Now, I should say, just to finish, think about this as being a sculptor, right? That we're trying to sculpt shapes. Now, we're not doing it the typical scale that the sculptor does it, but we're doing it with atoms, right? So we're doing sculpture at the molecular level.
I'd like to look a bit in the future and just want to ask you, Bruno, back to not just the vaccines, but the technologies that have been used in biology. What are the things that you're really excited about and that you say, okay, that's going to really change the future?
I don't like the name artificial intelligence because a lot of these things are not artificial intelligence. You know, there are machine learning algorithms, and machine learning algorithms have been used for many years. Okay, it's not just from now. Some of them more simple, some of them less simple. So I do think that the ability of learning these principles from data has really been changing very quickly the way that we look at biological data. Mm-hmm. Now, there's perhaps a few parts where we have not seen things kicking in yet, but I think they will, right? You know, a lot of it, particularly with automation, you know, automation of data collection, right? You know, so like having smarter algorithms to collect your data, right? So now in a way that, you know, we're no longer needed, you know, this kind of, you know, human labor in a way that, you know, we can perhaps spend more time thinking rather than doing.
Yeah.
You know, right now, doing is still a great skill, and it's fantastic, right? You know, having the skills to do things properly, it's a non-trivial skill. But while you do, oftentimes you don't have the bandwidth to think at the same time because, you know, you're too concentrated in doing. So, so I think, you know, perhaps what I see as very exciting is this idea that many of these tasks, which right now are sucking up our time for the doing, they might allow us to think a little bit more. And I think this would be great. That's a little bit of a general thing, but you see my point, right? So like in terms of automation and in terms of collecting the better data, in terms of like microscopy, which knows exactly which part of the data to collect, which can take decisions on the fly. I think this is pretty exciting.
Yeah. No, I have to agree with you on that. And I can remember when, I think a couple of years ago, AI and machine learning were the big things. But what you see in the industry, and I think also in different areas, is the fact how we're struggling around data and really having a better focus of getting the correct data in will basically get you also the correct data for machine learning and AI. And I've heard people say, crap in, crap out. So around the data structuring is, I think this is a big focus around this.
Indeed. I think this is a good place to end it because I think we've had a great discussion about vaccines, about the future of vaccines and indeed kind of protein design in general, and then how the many places that it can be applied in the future. I think science is in a good place and hopefully following the pandemic and hopefully more people will accept treatments, these new treatments, novel treatments, be accepting of new science. I know we do focus on the bad, but I think there's been broad support for the vaccines, which has been very, very good. That's, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think one point also, David, your favorite thing is the communication.
Yeah.
I think Bruno explained quite well and defined how important the communication is in a global aspect as what happened with COVID around vaccines. So I think that's a really important takeaway as well for our listeners.
Definitely. Thank you for being on the show. I'm going to close it out. Thank you for listening. And you can read more about computer-aided biology at computeraidedbiology.com. We're going to have a vaccine special this month, so you can see and read and hear all about vaccines and where that meets computer-aided biology technology and 21st century tools. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.